The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode is brought to you by my friend Rebecca Walzer, a financial expert who can help you protect your wealth. Book your free call with her team by going to friendofdinesh.com. That's friendofdinesh.com. Hey everyone, I'm Danielle D'Souza Gill, and I will be hosting Dinesh's podcast while he is away this week on vacation for his anniversary. If you're a regular Dinesh D'Souza listener, then you might have heard me before, since I am the only person who substitutes for him while he's gone. I regularly host a show on Epic Times called Counterculture, and I absolutely love doing it, but it's always a special treat for me when I get to join you guys on this podcast as well. The best way you can find me and more about me is to follow me on Facebook, Instagram, Truth Social, Twitter, all the places, Rumble. I'm at Danielle D'Souza Gill, and that's where you can find my content, my videos, thoughts, everything. But we have a lot of content to get to today. So today we're going to be talking about what we've been talking about all week and what everyone seems to be talking about, which is the Trump arrest. But before we go deeper into that today, we are going to talk to Mike Cernovich, a filmmaker, journalist, and commentator. We're going to speak with him all about this. We're going to talk to him about the Trump versus DeSantis feud, whether or not DeSantis is missing the moment during this critical time. But before we even speak to Mike Cernovich, we are also going to discuss the news that reparations may be given to blacks in California. Stay tuned. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast. Just when you thought it couldn't get any better, Mike Lindell and MyPillow are launching My Mattress Topper 2.0. Their new 3-inch MyPillow mattress topper is made up of three unique layers. Layer 1 is the MyPillow patented foam, which provides superior support and durability. Layer 2 is the transitional foam, which provides optimal comfort, evenly distributes body weight, and helps relieve pressure points. Layer 3 is the cover made from a special material to keep your body temperature regulated throughout the night. This MyPillow mattress topper is washable and dryable. It's made in the USA and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. This incredible 3-inch mattress topper is as low as $219.59 with promo code Dinesh. So call 1-800-876-0227. Again, that number is 1-800-876-0227, or just go to MyPillow.com. But either way, don't forget to use the promo code D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
During his now infamous trial, January 6th defendant Jacob Chansley, a.k.a. the Q Shaman, faced some very hefty sentences. These included a 5-year prison sentence and a fine of up to $250,000. In law, such fines are levied as a form of restitution in order to compensate for costs such as damaged property, medical bills resulting from personal injury, or even to pay an opponent's legal fees. The concept of reparations is that it is a form of punishment that can also help to repair the damage that was done by the accused. It's important to note, the government cannot fine you with reparations out of the blue. You have to be guilty of a crime. It's good that Chansley wasn't ultimately hit with the full amount, as $250,000 for most people can't be raised easily. People work their entire lives and still can't save that much money. It's such a large amount that even someone as gullible as Judge Lamberth, a man who genuinely believed the Q Shaman was somehow the breath from destroying America's democracy forever, thought the penalty was overkill. Lately, there's been another shaman in the news, only this shaman has two ends. Shaman Walton is a member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, a body which voted unanimously last Wednesday to approve a plan to give $5 million to every eligible black resident as part of the city's plan to make reparations for slavery. The plan was a way to go before final approval. Like every other member of the board, Shaman Walton wants to see it through. He says, quote, "We have to stay focused and stay together as a community," he says, "because now it is 100% more prevalent that we cannot be separated or divided. Let's stay the course. Because a $5 million payday for me is almost here." It might be pertinent to point out that Shaman Walton himself is black. And something also tells me he will be included among those deemed eligible for the payout. So you can see why his most pressing concern at this point is to encourage everyone to keep their eyes on the prize. His prize, specifically. He told his fellow supervisors, quote, "Let's not lose focus, because when we receive the final report, we have to actually resource the path forward." You see, he's already focused on the next hurdle to clear, actually finding the money it would take to fund this project. Currently, there are about 50,000 black people living in the city. San Francisco happens to be one of the whitest suburban centers in the United States, with the black resident population accounting for fewer than 6% of the overall population. The Stanford University Hoover Institution crunched the numbers and came up with what this plan would cost. $600,000 per non-black family. And if you're keeping track, that's well over twice what Jacob Chansley faced in a federal criminal court. How would you like to be a San Franciscan family realizing you suddenly are on the hook for an amount of money in excess of the fines levied for insurrection? It's one thing to be fined in a court of law, quite another to be fined in absentia for a 100-year-old crime that you did not commit. It may not even be a crime your ancestors committed. And this gets to the fundamental law and the reasoning behind reparations. You can't penalize innocent people for someone else's crimes. And to argue that it's justified solely because of race does nothing to solve the problem of racism. It's actually guaranteed to make race relations worse because you're unjustly punishing innocent people based on skin color. The fact that the Board of Supervisors approved this plan also demonstrates the naked contempt they have for their constituents. Over 500,000 per family is an insane amount. It's pretty audacious to think everyone would be okay with paying out that much cash without a complaint. And complain they did. To any sane person, complaining would be a normal response. But according to one of AP's articles, several supervisors were shocked to hear pushback from residents. "Yes, how dare you speak out, you stupid tax cow. Don't you know that you're not supposed to have a say? Your sole purpose in life is to give money when we milk you for it. Get back to work so that you can earn enough to pay off your race debt. Is this where we are as a country now?" Because that kind of dismissive and exploitative attitude sounds a lot more like the words of a slave owner than anything anyone on the right is saying. I would like to remind the San Francisco Board of Supervisors that their residents are human people. Research shows that even dogs understand when they are being punished unfairly. How did you think your fellow residents were going to react? Proponents of this cartoonishly stupid reparations plan say it can fix the ills caused by slavery generations ago. The Associated Press faults opponents and ironically claims that even liberal San Franciscans are, quote, apparently unaware that the legacy of slavery and racist policies continue to keep black Americans on the bottom rungs of health, education, and economic prosperity and overrepresented in prisons and homeless populations. What the Associated Press fails to realize is that at some point in history, most people were enslaved. The very English word comes from the word for the Slavic people who were enslaved by Vikings and North Africans. The Irish, too, were enslaved, as were the Chinese. One of the driving forces behind the Crusades was to rescue European Christians enslaved by Muslims. None of these people are asking for reparations, nor is anyone in America demanding reparations from African nations who started the African slave trade in the first place. Of course not. Those nations aren't as rich as San Francisco. Perhaps the weirdest thing about this reparations plan, the thing that reveals it for the lie that it is the fact that the proponents are completely blind to the injustice going on about them now. I'm not just talking about the fact that slavery is being practiced today and the good people of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors could care less, although that's a fairly damning observation given how much weight they attribute to the topic. Proponents of reparations believe that future generations should be held responsible for the crimes of their ancestors because those ancestors did not do the right thing in the moment. Had our ancestors rejected the African practice of slave trading from the outset, surely there would be no case to punish the residents of San Francisco today, right? This would seem to indicate that the biggest imperative for us today is to stop all such acts of criminal exploitation and government-sponsored abuse. Today, otherwise our children, grandchildren, or great-grandchildren will be on the hook for our present lack of incentive. But is that what the San Francisco Board of Supervisors are concerned about? We live in a country where corporate lobbyists bribe lawmakers to leave our borders open so the rich and powerful can have cheap and exploitable labor. We live in a country where our government is roaming around looking for Christians to threaten in jail. We live in a country where a shadow government colludes with San Francisco's most lucrative corporations to censor the truth and muzzle Americans. We live in a country where innocent people were punished for not taking experimental drugs. We live in a country where mentally unstable parents are forcing their children to undergo irreversible procedures for little more than some social media cred. So what do you say, San Francisco Board of Supervisors? Are you going to live up to the very standard you impose on your residents? Will you or your children bear the many penalties for the evils which you allow to exist in the here and now? After all, it's about doing the right thing in the moment, right? We're punishing people now because people in the past didn't do the right thing, and here you are, not doing the right thing. Just like those people who turned a blind eye to slavery and injustice back in the day. So if you do end up getting that reparations payout, I'm going to advise you not to bother even drawing up a will. Don't waste any time trying to ensure that your children are able to benefit from your windfall, because that $5 million, it's already spoken for. My grandpa didn't believe in the stock market. He was a put-your-money-in-the-bank kind of guy. But Dinesh discovered in the early 1990s that investing in the market makes sense if you're in it for the long term. Problem is, we're in a very rocky economy with lots of craziness at home and lots of instability abroad. There's always a risk of a black swan event, a single event that comes out of nowhere and basically cripples your savings. So how do we take advantage of the upside of the market and protect ourselves against the downside? We need some really good guidance here. My friend Rebecca Walser is a tax attorney and wealth strategist with her MBA from the London School of Economics. She and her team can help protect your wealth during these unprecedented times. Go to friendofdinesh.com and book your complimentary introductory call today to see if you qualify. Again, that's friendofdinesh.com. I am delighted to welcome our guest today, Mike Cernovich. He's a filmmaker, journalist, commentator on a wide range of topics. He produced the documentary called Hoaxed, Everything They Told You Is a Lie. Mike's one of my favorite Twitter followers, so make sure to find him on Twitter. You can also subscribe to his Substack. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah. So, Mike, I wanted to get your reaction to some of the recent kind of rumblings going on with Trump's arrest, and also just how do you feel like a lot of the presidential hopefuls and other people responded to the news?
Yeah, the Trump arrest was mishandled by everyone, especially, I think, DeSantis, which was unfortunate because I expected him to have better political instincts. The big mistake people are making right now is they're seeing it as Trump's arrest, whereas most of the country doesn't see it as Trump's arrest. They see it as a way to attack all of Trump's supporters, as a way to apply an unequal system of law. For example, I bring up your dad's case a lot. A lot of people don't even know about your dad's case because he handled it with such grace and moved on with his life, but it still actually probably makes me angrier than it makes him, which is, wait a minute, you went after Dinesh for helping a friend's campaign, and then Rosie O'Donnell says that she deliberately sent illegal campaign contributions and brags about it, and then nobody goes after Rosie O'Donnell. So is Dinesh, did he commit a crime for giving a friend $10,000 accidentally, because nobody understood this stuff at the time. Nobody knew you couldn't do that. It's silly. Nobody had any idea even. And then they have the full resources of the law brought on him. And then, of course, the FBI file says he was an anti-Obama filmmaker. And you think, oh, okay, well, that was obvious what would happen there. And then meanwhile, you have Rosie O'Donnell saying, oh, yeah, I deliberately send too much money, hoping that they don't send it back. Okay, so she's an admitted campaign contribution fraud. Admitted. And of course, nothing happens to her. We're seeing the same thing play out where in the Ricky Vaughn case, a guy makes a boomer joke about voting by text. He's indicted. But then there's a left-wing person telling Trump supporters election disinformation about where to vote. And her post goes viral and there's no indictment or arrest. So this isn't about Trump making a paperwork error or an entry that was incorrect in 2018 or 2016 or wherever, whenever he paid the amount of money. We all know that. And you would think that DeSantis would know that, even though, because DeSantis people keep telling me, Trump's making unfair attacks on DeSantis. Yeah, great. You follow me. You know that I'm very, very, very hotly against all that. So they're in this weird debate where they're arguing things that I didn't say, where I'm saying, yeah, I'm telling you that Trump has made some really below the belt attacks on DeSantis. You don't defend Trump because you're bootlicking. It's the opposite. You stand up for the principles at play here and you start to remind people that the law is being used unjustly to prosecute conservatives. So that's the issue here. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't understand that.
Right. And it seems like, you know, there's, of course, going to be personal attacks or kind of personal elements there if you're running against someone, which DeSantis hasn't said he is, but we all think he might. And so there's going to be that personal bad blood, I guess. But if you're just a regular American or a Trump voter or maybe you're a big DeSantis fan, either way, maybe both, then you might be thinking, you know, I like both these people, or I just want there to be a fair justice system. I don't want there to be this political, you know, persecution of only conservatives or Soros, you know, DAs and so on. And so it seems like the right thing to do would have been to rise above the personal, but to make it more about that issue, which is obviously such a key problem for so many people, even besides Trump, like you mentioned. And I saw Vivek Ramaswamy did kind of a good response on that. Did you feel like his response was pretty positive?
Yeah, he understands the issue on a very conceptual, intellectual level, which is what you would expect a DeSantis to. But maybe you get the Trump hitting you and you think the last thing I want to do is defend Trump. But you realize you're not defending Trump. You're defending the principle. You don't have to mention Trump. You can just do what I did and mention all these other cases that have happened and say this is what they're doing to Trump because he's the biggest great white whale. He's what they want. And that means if they can get him, they can get anyone. So something has to be done. And then, of course, DeSantis people go, well, if he brought that up in court, then, well, this is showing me that they don't really understand the moment. Sure, we know all this. We know Trump is going to surrender himself anyway. So it's an easy win. It's sort of like when I tell people when they're planning a wedding or something like that, invite people that you know or expect aren't going to show up because they're glad that you invited them, so you've extended good grace to them, and they're not going to show up anyway. It's just an easy win, so you're not even expanding your headcount. So everyone who's done any kind of social planning knows, oh yeah, these people probably aren't even going to show up. Even better, I'll make sure I'll invite those people because then it's a nice sentimental moment for them, and it feels good, and it doesn't cost us anything because they're actually not going to show up.
Yeah, for sure. And it seems like DeSantis does have some of that political acumen when it comes to other things. He, you know, if someone or business in Florida goes against his rules, he definitely fights back against them. So it's kind of out of character for him to not have a stronger stance in the situation. So maybe it is because of the personal stuff. But when it comes to this kind of DeSantis moment, I know you wrote that DeSantis may have missed the moment here. What moment do you feel like this could have been for DeSantis had he chosen a different path and chosen to have a stronger stance to Soros?
Right. Excuse me. If I'm DeSantis and I'm writing his speech or giving him the speech, if you read the whole speech, everything's good until the last paragraph where he says, I'm not going to get involved. This is a sideshow. This is a circus. I have more important issues. You cut that off because if you know anything about media editing or you've done films, you know that everything you say can be clipped. So whenever you're talking, you think, oh, could this be clipped? It's even gotten to the point now where I used to spell out words because people were making fake audio of me. So I wouldn't even say certain words without spelling them out, or I'd cover my mouth. That way there was no video. Now with deep fakes, they can make up anything. But that has to be your mindset, is you think, If I'm giving this speech, what's going to get clipped? Well, the last paragraph is what's clipped. And then, of course, DeSantis' people are upset because they go, look at what else you said, which was really great. Sure. But you have, sure. Have you done video editing? Have you done, go work on films and then find out how stuff is going to get clipped. So you didn't want it to be, you don't want to be seen as a person calling unlawful prosecutions a sideshow, that it doesn't matter, because it does matter. So all he had to do was say the first part. And then what would happen is the media would say, so you're, you know, because they're such liars. Oh, so you're saying you're not going to extradite, and they're going to make it this whole huge brouhaha. And now you're DeSantis, you're now in the arena, but you're not against Trump. You're against the Soros DA. And then it's you versus the Soros DA. And then you go, what are you talking about? I haven't said anything about any of that extradition. And now you're involved in the most significant national story. You haven't said that you're going to maybe necessarily go to the mattresses for Trump, but you position yourself against the Soros DAs. And by the way, you know who would really have hated it if DeSantis had done that? Trump. Trump would have been so mad, because then DeSantis would have elevated himself to the top of the food chain in that whole conversation. And that was the missed moment.
Right. And it seems like a lot of politicians outside of Trump don't really think this way. They don't think in this kind of more maybe just smarter way to approach politics, but they kind of want to do things how it's always been done. And maybe a lot of his advisors, maybe donors or people, are telling him, hey, you know, stay away from anything related to Trump, stay away from this issue, swing towards the center, I guess. What would be kind of your reaction to that type of advice to him?
My advice that I've been telling them is, and then it's funny to be called old, is you're pretending like 2015 didn't happen. DeSantis is going to run on policy, sure. So did Ted Cruz, man. So did Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan got whooped. Republicans got whooped twice by Obama before anybody could say voter fraud or any other narrative around 2020. Republicans got whooped bad. So you can't come at me with arguments that were settled in 2015, which is that media matters. Your white papers don't persuade anyone. White papers don't win votes. You do have to have a force of personality. You do have to have a certain element of showmanship and charisma. And the way I explain this to people is, because I got so traumatized by people harassing me over everything Trump did for 4 years. You probably remember that. Oh, can you believe what Trump did? Now with Biden, I ask my in-laws and everything. I go, oh, hey, have you heard this? You know, you see this video of this person getting beat up? Aren't you glad you voted for Biden? And they're all like, I didn't vote for that. And I was like, oh, no. You don't get this. Oh, you did. Because when I voted for Trump and supported Trump, I had to hear about every tweet that he ever said. Tweets, by the way, which don't even mean anything. So the truth is that the people who voted for Biden don't support his policies. These are, it's far left extremism. They don't support his policies. But they voted for the man, he's a nice guy, he's moderate, blah, blah, blah. Personality matters way more than policy. This was shown in 2015, 2016. It was shown in the last election, where people thought, well, maybe the country will calm down if we capitulate and vote for Biden. He's such a moderate, even though that's politically ignorant. Biden's always been a psychopath. They apparently never saw the Clarence Thomas confirmation hearings. He's a complete lowlife. But the media was able to cultivate that image of him as a sober Uncle Joe Biden versus the true madman that he is, of course, with the Ashley Biden diary that most of us didn't even think was real because it was so appalling. That was confirmed in court multiple times, but yeah. Which is another point about selective prosecution. The people, the Ashley Biden diary, very disturbing, not covered by the media. The people who found the Ashley Biden diary, abandoned property, were federally prosecuted, in fact, and pled guilty. So if you leave a diary at my house and it's abandoned property and I hand it over to a journalistic outlet, that's transportation of stolen property. And then that's what the government is focused on. That's what happened. A lot of people didn't notice when that happened. So the Ashley Biden diary has been confirmed twice, once by the federal prosecution, unjust malicious prosecution, and then just yesterday or the day before by that special master finding. But the media was able to manipulate that image. And that's what DeSantis is missing. You have to worry about messaging. Arguing policy isn't going to cut it on a national election.
Dinesh and Debbie started eating better this year and are on the road to losing some weight. But one of the foods they can't seem to eat enough of, and it's a requirement, are veggies. What better way to get all of your fruits and veggies than by taking Balance of Nature? Sourced from 31 whole fruits and vegetables, you'll get maximum nutrition with their star product, fruits and veggies in a capsule. They not only look better, but we feel better too, with lots of added energy that Balance of Nature gives them. Start your journey to better health right now. Take advantage of their New Year's offer and get $25 off plus free fiber and spice with your first preferred order of fruits and veggies when you use discount code AMERICA. This offer can end at any time, so call 1-800-246-8751. That's 1-800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code AMERICA. What are your thoughts on, so you're talking about kind of this personality, this charisma, on how the media is typically always against Trump, at least the left-wing media. And they're against DeSantis, but, you know, not as much, kind of depends on where Trump is. Maybe they want to benefit from pitting Trump against DeSantis, but pretty much DeSantis gets more positive mainstream media coverage than Trump. So would that be because he doesn't have as much of that personality? Or do you think it's because of his political views? Why do you feel like Trump is going to be the one who's vilified first?
Well, because DeSantis hasn't fully run nationally. Remember, DeSantis was killing grandma. 60 Minutes did that special on him claiming that he was giving the vaccine to a politically powerful donor. And even Democrats, because Democrats wanted everybody vaccinated, were hyperventilating over that lie by 60 Minutes because they're going, oh, great. DeSantis was getting people to the most popular market for distribution of the vaccine. And now you're saying that it's fake or corrupt or something. Good job. So even it was weird. Even Democrats were saying this is too far and it's probably going to torpedo their mass vaccination plan. So a lot of it is that he's just not on the national stage. But if you, I don't know if you caught this last week, I think early this week or maybe last week, there's now a person claiming that DeSantis watched him be tortured at Guantanamo Bay. So this stuff is going to come up. It'll be the once he announces for a national election, the smear machine will come on. Remember, Mitt Romney was treated pretty decently when he was a state figure as a governor, and then even as a senator now, he's treated well. But they accused him of killing his dog when he ran for president. They come up with anything. With Mitt Romney, I think he's I don't like him at all. I think he's bad for the country. He was against abortion, and then he ran for governor of Massachusetts, and he said, no, actually, I'm pro-choice now, and then he carpetbags his way to Utah, and then says, no, I was never pro-choice. These guys are lying about me, and then somehow they vote for him, which is another problem, is why are we voting for people like that? What kind of biases are leading to that? So what'll happen to DeSantis, it'll be underage, because remember, the New York Times tried this whole underage girls thing, and it didn't go anywhere because everybody said, oh, yeah, we invited our teacher to our graduation party and he showed up and it wasn't weird at all. But now we think it's sketch. So that's what happens is you do something totally normal, which is you're the younger teacher. Your kids, your students graduate college or high school. They're going to go off to college. You swing by, you say hi, maybe take a picture. You leave. You're not doing anything with them. You're not dating them. Nothing happens. But then you run for office and now they go, oh, yeah, actually, now that I think about it, that was like really creepy. And then, of course, it only takes one or two people to do what Avenatti did during the Kavanaugh hearings. You just lie. So he isn't anywhere near those waters yet. But as soon as he announces, you can 100% bet that there's going to be students making anonymous accusations against him that are lies. They're going to say that he tortured people. They're going to say that he watched people be tortured, that he laughed. There's going to be all these lurid details that are completely fake. That's all heading his way. You can guarantee that once he announces.
Dinesh and Debbie started taking Relief Factor 2 years ago, and the difference they have seen in their joints the past 2 years has been nothing short of amazing. Aches and pains are gone thanks to this 100% drug-free solution called Relief Factor. Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. The majority of the people who try Relief Factor order more because it works for them. Debbie has been able to do the exercises that for several years she wasn't able to do. It's been a game changer for her, her aunt, other members of her family, and for many other people. You too can benefit. Try it for yourself by ordering the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call the new number 1-800-4-RELIEF to find out more about this offer. That's relieffactor.com or call 1-800-4-RELIEF. Feel the difference.
I think Trump truths something like this, saying, hey, you know, DeSantis, you haven't experienced kind of this, I don't know the exact words, but basically saying like you may experience this in the future, like what I'm experiencing now, this like persecution or the media coming after you and so on. Do you think this one-sided political persecution using our justice system is something that a lot of people care about who aren't, you know, super conservative people? Because some people say, oh, you know, Trump has more of like the right wing base, but DeSantis could win because he's going to get all these other center people and all this. I'm concerned, though, because I kind of feel like our country is so divided that I'm not really sure how many people that would be in that kind of center part that might be the people who DeSantis would win over. And if he's kind of giving up a lot of the more of the base who might care about these kind of issues, like how do you think that would play out?
My case for DeSantis is he does not drive out Democrat turnout the way Trump does. So Trump drives out Republican voter turnout in a way that no one has ever seen. And he also drives out Democrat voter turnout in a way that no one has ever seen. If you look at the Florida election, Democrat turnout was kind of abysmal. So if DeSantis were somehow able to run in the general, then it wouldn't be a gimme election for him, but Democrats would be much less interested in coming out to vote en masse for him. So it would be better for the Republican House. It'd be better for Republican Senate if DeSantis were running in the general, not because he would turn out the Trump level numbers, but because he wouldn't turn out the Trump level Democrat numbers. And that's what I think a lot of people who argue against DeSantis maybe and say, but Trump can bring out these low propensity voters, which I've said for years, sure he can. He's also the greatest vote turnout person that Democrats have ever seen in their lives.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard because I feel like the Democrats have a little bit more of this mail-in ballot machine since COVID now. So I'm worried that their turnout wouldn't necessarily go down. Like if our turnout goes down, I don't know how much their turnout would go down. And I feel like we have to just like meet them in terms of turnout. But I mean, for sure, I'm sure that a lot of the media, because of the way they painted Trump too, would get more people to turn out on their side, like in person too. But if they paint Trump, or sorry, if they paint DeSantis as like another Trump and the same vilification, like you were saying, I'm just like concerned that that would lead to a situation where then they just have a lot of turnout and then we don't if our side isn't as excited.
Yeah, the issue is it won't work for what they're going to do to DeSantis. It just isn't going to work. That's why even towards the end of Trump's presidency, the attacks didn't work as well as they used to, because you'd heard everything. And at some point, you're just not buying it. In terms of the Democrat ballot harvesting machine, that works. And that will be more effective than ever, but that's still limited to, again, a lot of the urban areas. So we've kind of seen it. Atlanta, Wisconsin, which is, you know, Georgia you have to fight for. But Kemp won Georgia massively. That we had a midterm election. Kemp was able to win. There was, I believe she was a treasurer in Arizona. She was able to win. There are people who are able to win elections who aren't able to be presented so divisively, I guess. Because, yeah, DeSantis will be divisive. Everybody who runs is divisive. Mitt Romney killed his dog, right? Let's admit that they're going to try to make him look like this awful person. But he's also not giving him anything. So the thing that, even though it shouldn't matter, and it does, though. And I think that's one of the reasons I come to conclusions other people maybe don't, is I think this is stupid. And I don't think it should matter, but it does. It matters that when you supported Trump, you never knew what you were going to wake up to. Another tweet, another comment, another this, another that. There's a certain amount of fatigue that drives away people from supporting him. And with DeSantis, you know what you're going to get. You know that if you wake up tomorrow, there's not going to be some tweet that could be twisted in an awful way, or that might on its face look bad. And then because remember, Trump would say things that sounded pretty not good. And then it would be two or three days of him explaining why it wasn't really what you thought it was or what it read as. With DeSantis, you know you're not going to get that. So he's not giving them more material. You can always dig stuff up about a person's past. But if you're presenting an image that's incongruent with who he is now, nobody's going to believe it. You're going to say, oh, so DeSantis was like some weird groomer.
I don't think it would be that. It would be more that he's not really doing as much on kind of this issue now with the political persecution, or maybe is kind of falling into almost what Trump has accused DeSantis of. He's truth that, oh, you know, DeSantis, you're a Paul Ryan, you're this, you're that. And so he's kind of playing into that almost, as opposed to some people claimed that DeSantis is Trump just without the baggage. So a little bit of maybe what you were saying, where he's not going to tweet something that makes you uncomfortable. But I don't really feel like he is Trump without the baggage. I think he is actually different. He's a different kind of politician, and he may have different views on things, I think, honestly. So it's not that you're getting Trump without the baggage, in my opinion. But what do you think?
I wouldn't call him Trump without the baggage. I would call him somebody who's interested in governing and using his power. He's more of a right-wing Bill Clinton. It was famously said of Bill Clinton that he actually enjoyed being president, and he wanted to govern, and he wanted to move the levers of government, even if many people on our side, myself included, might not agree with what he was doing, but he actually enjoyed being president. With Trump, there was never anybody, even the people who work for him, they maybe won't say it publicly, but they'll say it privately to you if they haven't already. He didn't go in and say, wow, this is interesting. It's time. Let's get to work. How do I do things? He never really had this interest. He was still running. When he was president, he was still acting as if he was still running, that everything was done via media. Everything was done via Twitter. When you have to do policy procedure, you have to know how the bureaucracy works. You have to know where the levers are. So one great example of DeSantis is he said there's this Florida there's this college in Florida. They're not really doing anything. It's some far left wing weirdo thing. Well, we have the building. They have a budget. Why don't we just put Christian Rufo and a bunch of people in there and try to make a new college? And okay, brilliant, right? Brilliant. That's DeSantis getting into the weeds, going in. Why aren't we doing this? So you could imagine DeSantis day one as president saying, okay, how can I fire everybody that is bad? And people would go, well, there's going to be problems. And he would say, well, because sure, there's going to be problems. There's always going to be problems. But get me some memos. Let me figure this out. How do I hire people who are actually good? Well, let's figure that one out. How do I enact legislation? Well, he's done that as governor. He's actually done that. Here's how you have to deal with. Here's the decision makers. Here's the way you have to broker deals. That's DeSantis. Is he actually wants to be president because he wants to govern, and he's willing to get into the weeds on these issues.
Yeah. I mean, I love those things as well. And I love those examples. He's done so many amazing things in Florida. Has really used his office to do a lot of action items. And he usually goes back to mentioning that his record. But I guess I'm just wondering if when things get difficult, or when he's kind of in this situation, it seems like it's like a little bit disappointing, because I would have liked to see DeSantis do more of what you said, where he would kind of be presidential in this moment and look past it and focus on the action and on what people care about. I still really love both people. Do you think there's ever a chance that they're going to reconcile this feud, or maybe run together?
Impossible to say, right? Ted Cruz and Trump got over it, buried the hatchet. Anything's possible, right? A lot of people see it as it's just politics, and Kamala Harris became Biden's vice president after Kamala Harris had called him a white supremacist, racist, borderline neo-Nazi during the debates. And then when asked, well, how do you support Biden now? Well, it was debate. And then, her cackle. That was a debate. cackle. Anything is possible. I don't think so, though. I think that Trump is going to want somebody like Carrie Lake, especially because identity politics has really infiltrated the Republican Party in a lot of ways. So For example, there's a lot of people, oh, we're excited about Nikki Haley. And then Nikki Haley's tweeting out, they're not ready for me. I'm a woman, immigrant, this, that. It's like, okay, so your policies are terrible and you can't defend. You're Mike Pompeo, right? You're utterly indistinguishable from Mike Pompeo. But there's some element within the Republican Party that wants to play into the identity politics aspect. And then that would be able to say, look, we got Carrie Lake. She's popular. She comes from a swing state, even though with that last election, you might want to wonder what that would do with Arizona. So I would find it hard to believe if DeSantis were Trump's VP. And I don't know that DeSantis would want to run as Trump's VP, because if he's not in charge of the campaign, he thinks that there's probably a greater chance of him losing. DeSantis would want to govern. Two bulls, one pasture, right? It rarely works.
Yeah. Do you think that Trump has a greater chance of choosing Carrie Lake or Kristi Noem?
Right. That's what I mean by the identity politics aspect. Could be either. If he had to pick one, that he's going to go back and forth and everybody's already lobbying for him hard on what he should do. So, right. But that's the thinking. It is probably most likely going to be one of them.
Mm. And what about DeSantis? Who do you think he would choose if he were running?
That's another great one. I don't think he's caught up in having to check boxes necessarily. He's not really concerned about that. But that would be another – he would do – what he would do is he would do it the way you're supposed to do it, which is I want somebody extremely popular from a swing state. So, if I'm DeSantis, Kemp wouldn't do it, but I would say I want Kemp, even though Trump's base might hate that. And I'm not saying Kemp specifically, but I'm saying that's how you want to think. Who's a Republican who outperformed Trump in a swing state or in a close state? That's who you want as your running mate, because that's how you shore up the electoral college. That's how you have to think. Well, how can we shore up the electoral college? Who actually won an election in a state that Trump lost or that Trump might lose? And then that's who you want as your running mate. You don't think who's going to be great for the media or who's going to impress people on social media. You want to think about the electoral college and how you're going to get a state.
Interesting. Yeah. Wow. Well, Mike, thank you so much for these thoughts. This has really been fascinating. I'm curious to see how this all plays out, and hopefully in the process, I want both of them to do well, and I don't want things to end badly. So hopefully they, both have good careers ahead of them. But thank you, Mike.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Dinesh and Debbie gained weight, not telling you how much, just too much, during COVID, and decided it was time to drop some pounds. They started the PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition program 6 weeks ago. Debbie has already lost more than 8 pounds, and Dinesh is down 16. The program is based on science and nutrition. No injections, no pills, no hours in the gym, no severe calorie restriction, just good, sound, scientifically proven nutrition. It's so simple. They make it easy by providing 80% of your food at no additional cost. They tell you when and what to eat. And guess what? You can do this without ever being hungry. The founder, Dr. Ashley Lucas, has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition and is a registered dietitian. She helps people lose weight, get healthy, and most importantly, maintain that weight loss for life. If you're ready to lose that excess weight for the last time, call PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition at 864-644-1900 or find them online at myphdweightloss.com. That number again is 864-644-1900. Well, that wraps up today's show. Make sure to follow me on social media if you like today's episode. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, True Social, all the places. I'm at Danielle D'Souza Gill. That's where you can find my videos, thoughts, all those things. I host a show regularly on Epic Times called Counterculture, and I absolutely love doing that, so I hope to see you guys over there. And I'll see you all tomorrow.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com. three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.